One of my favorite segments of the week is our NOLA Coalition segment that we do every Tuesday at 11 o'clock because we've had the opportunity to meet so many incredible folks doing incredible things in our community. As cliche as it sounds, just to make it a safe place to live, work, and raise our family and to lift ourselves up each and every day. They're all difference makers in so many different ways and so many walks of life. And today is no different. We are joined by Dr. Ji-Yun Ko, who is the executive director of Coats for Kids. And Dr. Ko is a distinguished cellist and educator serving as the conductor of the Xavier University Symphonic Band and executive director, as I pointed out, of Coats for Kids and Make Music NOLA. She has performed all over the world for respected figures like the Dalai Lama, Congressman John Lewis, Yo-Yo Ma. And beyond her musical achievements, Dr. Ko is a dedicated producer and headliner of sold-out concerts and fundraisers that benefit children, artists, disaster victims, and public schools. And in 2009, she founded Coats for Kids, and she joins us. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the nice intro.
My pleasure. I've heard a lot about you. I've heard about your music. I heard about the wonderful things that you do in our community. And obviously, Coats for Kids is an initiative that I think a lot of people are familiar with. So tell us about the organization and tell us about your thought process of what brought this to be.
Thank you so much. And I have to say, I heard a lot of nice things about you and about your show, too. Yeah, the Coats for thing, Coats for Kids, I started when I moved to New Orleans, maybe 1 year after I moved to New Orleans. I found a little coat from a box that my mom gifted when I entered to college in Korea. I'm originally from Korea. So I wanted to actually find the right person to donate the coat to. So I asked my fellow musicians, if you guys think it would be a good idea, we are going to have a little concert and we are going to collect coats for underserved youth, because I noticed New Orleans can be very cold for a few weeks. And I heard from school teachers that some students don't show up when temperature drops below 40. Mm-hmm. So my colleagues agreed to put a nice concert. And since then, we didn't miss any year, except 1 year that we had a real challenge financially. And since then, we collected over 3,600 coats. Actually, there was a driving power behind it, because Mr. Alice Masalas really liked our project. He said that this is not really about collecting coats, but it's really bringing the community together. So I will support you. So he, until his passing, he was our co-host. And we were a little bit lost after we lost him during the COVID time. And then we became actually non-profit last year to honor his passion and all the supporters in the community. And now we have new initiative serving system-impacted youth with a songwriting workshop. So students we find in Covenant House or Son of Saint or World of Art Boys Home, we teach them without focusing on music theory or anything like that. We teach them to complete a lullaby or rap or gospel, anything there they want to create. And we just make a platform to share their voices, experience through music. Does it explain?
No, absolutely. It's interesting. I've always, not unlike the hospitality industry, the music mm-hmm. community and the music industry are a group, a collective group of folks from all walks of life that really give back to their community in so many different ways. And they love sharing what they love, the most, their music. And it's so important to our community. It's what we're known for. Mr. Marsalis, I think it was Dr. Mm-hmm. Marsalis, he was bigger than life in the community and so many things and endeavors that he got involved in, right?
Yes. And, The most amazing thing about him is he was an amazing, great musician, but he really focused on helping people in the community, especially the youth. And I'm the beneficiary of his, you know, all support and influence. So I just continue what he desired in his life.
No,
and
absolutely.
I'm the right person, as you just said. A lot of musicians are involved in this project, and maybe 1,000 other projects in New Orleans, right? These musicians who are so talented, they are also having such a great heart for the youth and the other members in the community. So you're so right about that.
And you guys have actually embraced some of these special programs of young musicians that are, you know, feeling their way through the process and improving upon their trade. And they're so special, too. I forgot the stats on this, but I think it's less than 2% of the people in the world actually play a musical instrument. And I think it's less than 1% can actually play an instrument and dance and move around at the same time.
Very interesting. Yeah, you know, that's my goal as an educator. As you mentioned, I teach at Xavier University, too. And it's not only about children or youth, but I believe that as a music educator and as a musician, that everybody has to have that musical instrument, including your voice, throughout your life. That really enriches your life and connects people. And I cannot agree with you more. You know, it shouldn't be 1 or 2%, right?
Right. But, the point I was making, and I mean, I really appreciate what y'all do, because a lot of times these kids, they have this talent and they don't really appreciate just how special they are. Right. I mean, it's right. a unique ability that's
yeah.
out there. I'm very jealous of it. I can hardly walk and chew gum at the same time.
And you know, that's the whole thing. You know, like we have a lot of youth trying to learn instruments, but we are talking about, in our case, we're talking about system impacted youth who might have a really poor education opportunity, and expecting them to have a good musical experience is really, really challenging, right? So we are
sure.
very proud that we go to those, you know, youth and then give them, okay, we have now this guitarist, we have this trumpet player who are amazing musicians in New Orleans, and not only in New Orleans, maybe worldwide, right? And then we're going to make song. And in an hour, they start smiling, they start telling stories about their life, and then they complete a song. It is just a magical moment for me and for many others involved in this project.
So you guys have an upcoming event that's all about the Coats, obviously. So tell us about this annual concert that y'all are hosting.
Yeah, we meet always around Mr. Alan Smithson's birthday to honor his contribution, because he was such like great supporter and also our longstanding co-host. So our concert will held in Gallia Hall, thanks to Citi for supporting our project. November 21st, and we have always amazing lineup, and most of them are returning artists. But this year, we are going to have a very special moment. We are going to focus on presenting youth nonprofit organization, actually nonprofit organizations serving youth, such as Roots of Music, Make Music NOLA, and Xavier University Symphonic Band, and also LPU musicians are going to support us by joining our concert. And I think in my heart, it's really special this year's concert, because we are going to feature special performance by students from our songwriting workshop for System Impacted Youth, who will proudly perform their first original songs. And yeah, that, and also the president and the CEO of Greater New Orleans Incorporated, Michael Hecht, will be our DJ. Did you know that Michael has the talent?
Oh, absolutely. I tease him about it all the time on the show.
Really?
And y'all are really special if you got Michael Hecht to come out.
Yeah. You know what? It was so sweet of him. You know, I'm in his collision group, right? So, cohort. Uh-huh. So I talked about my annual concert. We've been doing this since 2009. We're always successful. We have a couple of 100 people coming and thousands of community members just volunteering, all my students performing their own songs. And then I asked, Michael, we want dance. And I have to find a DJ. And he said, oh, you know, I'm a DJ. And then I asked him, how much do you charge? And he said, glass of wine. And okay, I can afford that.
DJ El Camino, if my memory serves
me
correct.
Yeah, right. You're right.
So let's talk a little bit more.
You.
So the event is November 21st. Is that actually Mr. Marsalis's birthday?
Mr. Marsalis's birthday is November 14th. So
oh,
we
14th.
Usually
okay.
would do around his birthday. And
yes.
then when he was, you know, with us, we started celebrating his birthday with his cake. But we still do it, you know, although he's not really with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked because that's my father's birthday. So I was just kind of curious.
So you have to buy some tickets for your father then.
Absolutely, in memory of my dad. So anyway, the concert's mm-hmm. at 7. The cost is $30. Mm-hmm. There's a patron party that's at 6:15 for $100. And you ask that those that attend bring children's coats of any size or gender to support the coat drive for the underserved youth. And if folks want to sign up or register, they can purchase tickets at concert.coats, K-O-A-T-S, the number 4, kids, K-I-D-S.com, right?
That's correct. The coats with a K.
Right. Concert.coats with a K, 4, the number 4, kids.com. And I'll make a donation to you guys this year, and I'll try and get there on November 21st if I don't have a conflict.
That would be so great.
I love music. I mean, I love watching kids play music. I just, you know, to watch their face just light up. There's no better feeling, right? I mean, it's just absolutely
that's so
incredible.
Nice, Neil. And actually, I met you before at French Quarter Fest a long time ago because I was ambassador for the fest, and we didn't have much time to talk. But I would love to talk to you about, you know, all your passion for the community as well. And thank you so much, you know, having me on your show. This really helps.
And Dr. Ko, I don't know if you knew this, but I started a band at the JPSO when I was sheriff for underprivileged kids. It's called the JPSO Band of Excellence. The sheriff, we built a band room on our campus, and Sheriff Joe LaPinto agreed to keep it alive and well, and it's still going. And I would love for you to address those kids at some point in time, and I'll talk to Sheriff LaPinto about it. I think it was one of the highlights of my service as sheriff to the community, and I was so glad that Sheriff LaPinto agreed to keep it alive and well and keep it going.
That's amazing story, Newell.
It's changed a lot of kids' lives, exactly what y'all are doing.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of this model, and congratulations to you, and thank you so much for joining us today, and much success with this. And
thank you so much. I have to thank you and your radio station and your listeners and all the community members who trusted us. You know, thank you very much for having me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Ji-Yun Ko, is the executive director of Coats for Kids and also is at Xavier University, folks. And if you want to go on November the 21st, check them out at concert.coats with a K. The number 4, kids.com. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ed Chervenak, professor of political science at UNO. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hi, Newell. How are you today?
Doing well, sir. Thank you so much. I guess one election process ends and let the games begin. Another one has started the day after the other one.
Yes.
And kind of quick, right?
Yes, and we're still counting votes in some of these congressional districts. And so it's not over yet, but we're already moving on to the mayoral election for next year.
For the benefit of the listening audience, the mayoral elections will take place when?
October 2025.
So Helena Moreno announces, she threw the gauntlet down and said, those that want to run, you're going to have to decide sometime soon because I'm off and running.
She is the first out of the starting gate. She's already held fundraisers, raised about $500,000. She's putting together her campaign team, her media people, her pollster, campaign consultant. And so she's going to hit the ground running. And so it'll be up to others now to catch up with her.
So others that are talking.
Well, the three big names are, of course, Helene Moreno, Oliver Thomas, who represents District E, and State Senator,
Royce Duplessis, right?
Royce Duplessis, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is basically considering running and so is waiting to basically hear from, his people in terms of being able to raise money and build out from his Senate district.
I heard from somewhere that even Arthur Hunter has talked about the possibility of entering the race.
Yeah, he's one of these perennial candidates, and so he has been talked about. I don't think he's made any real moves yet. I think he's just kind of waiting to hear what other people are saying.
As we think about this race, obviously we have this large political figure in Baton Rouge, the governor, Jeff Landry. How important is this going to be for whichever one of these candidates kind of somewhat aligns with the governor? These are Democrats. He's a Republican. But it seems as though there's a role that he may play here.
Yeah, the governor wants to increase his role in New Orleans. We saw with the increased police presence. He's taking credit for the reduction in crime. He's dealing with the homelessness problem directly. And so he wants to clean up New Orleans. He wants this to be the shining jewel for the state of Louisiana. And it's also because we are an economic engine for the state. So, he wants to put our best foot forward for the Super Bowl, all right, and make New Orleans an attractive place for business to come to.
Yeah, in your estimation, is there value in coming to this race from the legislative body of the city, meaning the council?
Well, if you look back in most mayoral races, that those people who run for mayor have usually come from the city council. They know the inner workings of government. They know who the players are. They know what the processes are. And so it makes sense that, that they're coming from the legislative branch. I'm trying to think where else they could come from. I mean, they could certainly come from, major business individuals may decide to run. But for the most part, we see it's kind of dominated by the politicos rather than the business sector.
And the members of this council have, I guess, in some respect, worked really hard to separate themselves from Mayor LaToya Cantrell, right?
Well, yeah. When you're at 33% job approval, you're not going to have a lot of political allies out there. People are going to, keep their distance. And they've also worked to basically rein in some of the power of the mayor, particularly with appointments and basically withholding funds from different departments who are not basically providing the information that city council wants. So they've been pretty aggressive towards this mayor, and so I'm not surprised that they're kept their distance.
Ed, you follow this closely as it relates to the city. What do you see as one of the biggest challenges for this slate of candidates for the upcoming mayor's race?
Well, typically the biggest challenge is to deal with the crime problem. That's always at the top of people's minds, but also, the infrastructure in the city is in dire need of repair. We look at the conditions of the streets. They're terrible. Drainage and flood control, it's not up to task. We're having these, increased severe storms, and our flood control system is not up to snuff to deal with it. And an emerging issue is this lack of affordable housing. This is, was noted in our quality of life survey that 72% of people felt that that was one of the biggest problems, or at least that this was a service that was not being provided very well by local government. And so I think that those, you know, those are the issues. It's crime, infrastructure, and affordable housing. I think that's what's concentrating people's minds right now.
Interestingly, your thoughts about whether or not this is a money problem, or has this historically been an execution problem?
I think it's
or a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. There's, you know, there's never enough money for our needs. You know, there our needs are unlimited, but our resources are limited. And of course, we have seem to have issues with execution, putting the right people in place in terms of being able to carry out these programs and these policies. And it seems to, you know, differ from administration to administration.
The perception that the mayor has some potential legal issues, does that change the kind of the flavor or the landscape of this next mayor's race?
Well, you know, that's probably something that they're going to run on in terms of I'm going to run a clean, you know, more efficient administration. We, you know, when we're bogged down by scandal, it looks bad for the city. It's hard to basically convince businesses to come to the city if you have a scandal-plagued mayor, and so I would think they would want to focus on ethics and bringing in competent people as well.
You know, oftentimes we talk about elections as being the most important election, you know, in however many years or whatever. But I do get the sense that this upcoming election, because of a lot of what has gone on during this administration, really has heightened importance. Your thoughts?
Well, you're right. Everyone thinks that every election is the most important election, and that, you know, if my candidate doesn't win, then, you know, the republic's going to collapse or the city's going to collapse. But, I mean, we're able to muddle through regardless of who gets elected. But I think, you know, a lot of people feel we're at a crossroads. Either we can continue on the path that we're on, or we can change direction and build up New Orleans and make an attractive place. Stem the population loss, increase diversity of business, and make it a much more economically dynamic city.
Yeah, because a lot of the issues that, as you outlined, these are not, they're not really simple solutions to any of these challenges, right?
No. I mean, you know, you think of infrastructure problems, you know, trying to fix all the streets, that takes huge amounts of money. I mean, we had $1 billion from FEMA, and we still don't have all the streets fixed properly.
And we still don't have the money spent.
Either, yeah, right? That's another issue. I mean, we've got the money, and we can't seem to figure out how to spend it. When our needs are very dire, in fact. But, you know, drainage and flood control, you know, the system is antiquated. It would take billions and billions of dollars to basically bring it up to speed to deal with what appears to be this increased severity of storms. We're seeing, you know, much greater rainfall, much more damaging winds as a result of these storms, and we need to figure out a way to keep up with Mother Nature.
I made the observation with Joe Geruso the other day, and I was curious about your thoughts, that I thought fiscal responsibility was going to be right up there because, you know, when you look at the construct of what the governor's proposing relative to tax reform, I think, you know, a lot of assistance that has been provided by the state and Trump coming into office as well at the federal level, and a lot of what they're talking about federal sustenance is going to wane as well. It really highlights the necessity for fiscal responsibility. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, if Trump wants to get his tax cuts passed, that Republicans are going to want the spending cuts in return to make it somewhat of a zero-sum process. And the first area that gets cut is aid to the states, and then if aid to the states gets cut, that means aid to the cities gets cut by the states. And so this is something that we're going to have to be very cognizant of, that we, you know, the federal government just may be turning off the spigot in terms of money, you know, in terms of revenue sharing and things of that nature, and block grants. And so it could be a tough 4 years for not just New Orleans, but a lot of urban areas.
Yeah, because I think the councilman said it, somewhere just under half of the proposed city budget are revenue sources that are not self-generated from other sources, meaning state and federal government.
That's correct. And so if the federal, and particularly the federal government, so if they begin cutting back aid, that's going to put a real constraint on our budget and our ability to meet the needs of the citizens.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the willingness of the cast of candidates that actually run for this office, you know, to do that. I mean, you know, cut back management, as you well know, is not easy. It's difficult.
No, it's always difficult to cut back programs, cut back management, that, you know, we just become used to these programs and used to this level of government, and, you know, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and make those cuts, and it's not easy to do, and it's not popular, and you anger a lot of people when you do so.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. What's your belief about other candidates declaring? Do you think this expedites this process?
I think, you know, I checked the last time there was a mayoral election, there were 14 candidates, and that was even with an incumbent mayor running. So I expect anywhere from 10 to 15 candidates to throw their hat in the ring.
Wow. I forgot about how many have historically run. That's a lot of folks running around out there for sure. As always, we always appreciate the conversation. Dr. Ed Chervenak, professor of political science at the University of New Orleans, my alma mater. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Noel. Have a good day.
You too, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Want to win tickets to the next Saints home game versus Cleveland Sunday in the Caesars Superdome? You can score two premium tickets to the game, plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. Open bar with premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, all overlooking Champion Square. Winning is easy. Go to WWL.com/contest and enter for your chance to win tickets to the Saints battle with Cleveland from Dudley DeBosier, official injury lawyer of Lawyers of the Saints and Saints Radio WWL. And tonight at 7, Saints Hour with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis and the play-by-play voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, followed at 8 o'clock by the Pelicans Weekly. Went to the Pelicans game last night. Oh, man, we, you know, lost another. I mean, it just so many players that are playing that unless you followed these folks' careers, you wouldn't know of them. I mean, it's just the injuries just racking up over there, almost the same as what has happened with the Saints for sure. It was just tough to learn of all of the injuries, uncertainty about Zion Williamson and how long he's going to be out. I mean, there was a lot of chatter in the arena last evening. A lot of folks were really looking forward to seeing him having a breakout year this year. And then lo and behold, he's hurt again. You know, it's a bang up game. It's very physical. And we just have these injuries mounting. It was a close game throughout the night, and just they lost it at the end. Had an opportunity to win it with a 3-point shot with a couple of seconds left on the clock, and just were not able to drain the shot, and so the Brooklyn Nets ended up beating them last evening. Had a lot of fun. I always have a lot of fun watching the game. Was with good company, had a lot of friends, so we had a great time last evening, and maybe next time, maybe they'll be able to pull it off again in the near future, hopefully. We will be right back, folks. Give us a shout, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with David Byard, Director of Immigration Studies at the Heritage. And in the back half of the next hour, we'll visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll talk about the Saints' 20-17 win over the Falcons and what they have headed their way and taken on the Cleveland Browns at home this Sunday. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL.